BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hacking is a broad church, but there's one recurring value that most hackers subscribe to, the idea that information should be liberated.
When you hack something, it's because you want to have access to a system or maybe part of a computer or maybe information that you wouldn't have without certain limitations. So hacking and piracy is very much the same.
But what information and how to free it has always been up for debate. Do you want to share some content without paying for it? Or do you want the right to tinker with hardware and software?
The whole idea behind free and open source software is that we should have a right to hack. We shouldn't be powerless to just use whatever tool is provided to us, but that we can engage with it. It is all about our ability to hack.
I'm Gabriella Coleman, a professor of anthropology at Harvard, and this is The Hackers, a series that delves into the hidden histories of hacking and uncovers how it shaped the world as we know it. In this episode, we're exploring how piracy and open source have been central to hacking movements, and whether they have succeeded in liberating information.
My name is Karen Sandler. I am a lawyer with an engineering background, and I'm executive director of the Software Freedom Conservancy.
Free and open source software is very close to your heart. Can you explain why to the listeners?
I literally have a big heart. It's called hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, and it's totally fine, but I'm at a very high risk of sudden death. Sudden death is like the medical technical term. And it's not a big deal because I have a pacemaker defibrillator. And when I was diagnosed with this condition and told that I need this defibrillator, I found that the doctors really hadn't thought deeply about the way that these devices function and even the fact that they had software on them at all.
Karen was already involved in the open source movement, but this is when she became really passionate about not being beholden to whatever software was handed to us.
Our software does not have to be developed as companies developing software that they earn royalties for, that they use copyright as a monopolistic way of controlling who gets to use which software. And instead, we can make our software for sharing.
Open source software fundamentally relies on the law, licenses, and a kind of honor system.
The software is licensed under a license that permits the sharing, modifying, and copying. But there are two very different models for how one can accomplish this. One is a copyright license that says you can do whatever you want with this software. The other one says you can do whatever you want with this software, but if you make changes and distribute those changes, you have to do it under this very same license. And this is called copyleft, and it's the idea that you use copyright as like a little hack on copyright to keep the software free instead of using copyright to prevent people from sharing it.
Copyright is a thorny issue, and it's one that another movement rejects entirely.
My name is Peter Sundekolmisoppi, and I'm one of the co-founders of the Pirate Bay, the most resilient downloading site in the world ever, made by hackers for the average people.
The Pirate Bay was infamous in its day, the bane of Hollywood, but it was about more than just sharing the latest summer blockbuster.
We created the site as an activist project where we wanted access to information and we wanted people to be able to understand and use the better technology of file sharing, which was more open to the general public. Before torrents, people needed to have huge libraries of things to share themselves in order to access other people's huge libraries of things. Sites like the Pirate Bay had the intention of bringing this to the general public so that everyone could contribute a little bit with bandwidth or by comments or by being involved in the community. So it was very much about using technology just to make sure that people had access to information, like typical hacktivist project would be.
The Pirate Bay did not only allow people to download commercial or creative content, it became an early whistleblowing platform where people could share leaks and dangerous information.
So very often, if there was anything that was leaked from a company or a government, there would be a torrent that was uploaded to Pirate Bay. And a lot of people would know that if you upload it to Pirate Bay, it would be very anonymously because we as a group would never give out information about who uploaded anything. We would not store that information. And it became a default tool before WikiLeaks, I would say, for people to share large quantities of information that they wanted the public to know about or get access to.
It was, it seemed like, a bit easier even to post things on Pirate Bay compared to WikiLeaks, insofar as WikiLeaks had to approve, right, the material being posted.
Yeah, and of course, that's for good and bad, I would say. Like, the ethos was anything you upload, as long as it's correctly labeled, if you upload a virus and you say it's not a virus, it would be deleted. But if you upload a virus to Pirate Bay and saying in the description, this is a virus, it would stay there. So there are very few limitations on what you can upload. So basically, of course, child porn and things like that would not be accepted. But anything else essentially goes. I think it would be different today. But 20 years ago, when we were all much more innocent as a community, it was an easy path to have this everything goes kind of attitude.
In the early days, that innocence was shared by a lot of different movements. Both piracy and open source were very much rooted in hacker philosophies. Piracy was seen as the bad boy, but it was robust and effective. Open source, on the other hand, has always been more straight-laced, but it was vulnerable to being assimilated into the mainstream.
Every single company is using open source. And because of that, people say that open source has won. But I'm just going to be plain about it. The industry has largely co-opted the open source movement. Free software as a movement started out with a bunch of really ideological contributors to software, people who really thought that we could build a different tech future. And they worked hard and created a lot of really cool code that companies haven't been able to live without. And consequently, they've hired a lot of those developers. And so some of the developers who were the most principled and in some cases anti-corporate back in the day have jobs at big tech companies where they are working on the project that they once had worked on for ideological purposes, but now work on for the company's products and profit. And so companies use a lot of lip service to talk about the open source they're doing, how they're contributing back, how they employ people to work on open source, but it doesn't actually result in the very thing that those ideological people started doing, which is to have control over your own equipment. We were able to do it a lot better 10 years ago than we are now.
It's hard for lay people to even find, let alone use, open source products in many cases, but companies can be right in there. Apple uses open source. Google wouldn't even be possible without it. The richest and most powerful groups have benefited the most from a movement meant for the people. Comparatively, Pirate Bay was more user-friendly. And for Peter, it was about making sure that the information hosted there was available for everybody.
Not all laws are moral. And I think copyright is, to a certain extent, very immoral because it puts people in classes again. So with the internet, especially, we had a possibility of having access to all information for everybody. And that has been broken by copyright, saying like, if you can't afford it, you're not going to get it. Even though it costs us nothing to give you this copy, it will increase your knowledge and enrich your life. We are going to withhold that from you. So for me, it is really annoying that we have this discussion about legally right or wrong, because the discussion we should have is morally right or wrong.
Both these movements had a similar early goal, but they were so radically different in approach, it seemed inevitable that they would butt heads.
Do you think piracy is in conflict with open source?
The biggest problem I have personally when it comes to piracy is actually something that I learned when talking to Richard Stallman, who is the founder of the free software movement. He was really upset with piracy because when people download a copy of Windows, they don't look for alternatives because you have access to this commercial great software. You wouldn't look for the free as in no cost option because you don't have to think about if you can afford it or not. So in many ways, piracy has been, I would say, bad for open source because if we wouldn't have piracy, people would have less access to Windows. They would have less access to Mac OS and all of these other things, and would have to be kind of pushed into the open source community. Definitely, I'm all for open source. I would rather people use Linux or some other operating system, but I just want open source to improve so much more that it is as robust as these other alternatives. But like looking at GIMP, which is basically the biggest open source image manipulation program, it has nothing compared to Photoshop. Like you can't really get a job using GIMP. That's not going to be an avenue for you professionally. And I think piracy cements that, which is bad, but it forces, hopefully, open source to push a little bit more to become even more user-friendly and better.
To become more ubiquitous with users, open source faces a few hurdles, one being an unusual new brand of pirates.
What's so interesting is that some of the companies that have been the most vocal about what a terrible problem piracy is are also companies that are in violation of copyleft licensing.
Many companies using open source software are not abiding by the license terms. Karen's organization fights to make companies comply with copyleft licensing, but it costs a lot of time and money. However, companies might claim to have a good reason to keep things closed. Sharing their code could put people at risk, but it's not that simple.
When I started doing research into my own medical device, I was so horrified, Biela. These devices have proved to be vulnerable in a variety of ways. Like, you can take control of defibrillators, insulin pumps, you can control them and interfere with them remotely.
Not just that, sometimes the code is not written for the benefit of all users.
When I was pregnant, my heart did what a normal pregnant woman's heart does. Very high percentage of women who are pregnant have palpitations. My defibrillator thought my heart was in a dangerous rhythm. Mm. And so it shocked me unnecessarily, repeatedly. And the only way I could get around that was by taking drugs to slow my heart rate down.
Open source isn't a panacea for security, but it does have real benefits.
In fact, making software available for testing and available for review leads to the chance of finding these flaws. And more importantly, when it's free and open, it can be independently assessed. And White Hat hackers or research departments or even other companies in the space have the ability to step up and change it.
We might be at an inflection point. We're surrounded by devices that control a lot more of our lives. So people are starting to ask questions about how they're coded and the intention of those creating the code. There's a lot of pushback against Silicon Valley specifically, but the public still needs to get on board with open source. Piracy, on the other hand, never stopped growing, especially in the non-English speaking world, where it's viewed as a vital resource for scientific, medical, and other key data. The Pirate Bay may not be in the headlines anymore, but they're still sailing. The pirates know how to survive and make an impact, and they keep ideas around liberating information in the spotlight.
Do you think it's important to have militants and radicals as well as more kind of straight-laced interventions when it comes to the different types of advocacies and activisms in the hacker world?
I think in general, there's always great to have diversity, and you can't really make the moderate people push things towards you if you don't have someone who's the rebel and runs for, you know, with some insane idea that's too far out for people in general to accept. So I think that the people that are extremely revolutionary in their thinking and in the way that they react things and what they demand, that is paving the way for people that are less rebellious and less revolutionary and maybe more okay for, let's say, the other party to discuss with and agree with, to have some sort of power, actually. So I think that you need the diversity. I think we need all of that in order to actually have an ecosystem that actually pushes the agenda forward for whatever topic it is, if it's hacking or piracy, or if it's in politics. It has the same kind of pattern that you need all of those things to actually have a vivid society. But I don't, you know, it's really weird kind of reflecting upon something which is still happening. But I definitely think there is space in hacking community, or like in the hacking Hall of Fame for pirates as well, and, you know, especially Pirate Bay, you know, the coolest of them.
The word hacker may not immediately conjure up the idea of philosophy, but philosophical sensibilities do power these technological movements. Neither side that wishes to liberate information has quite landed it, and maybe never will. The important thing is they're providing alternatives and spurring people to consider different choices to what has been handed to them. Hack technology, hack law, hack philosophy.
Hello, I'm Vanessa Casile, and there is nothing I love more than a great documentary.
I'm woken by the sound of gunfire.
There's something about a true story told well that changes your perspective on the world.
He trusted the wrong people, and it's obviously cost him his life.
Radio 4 is home to the world's greatest audio documentaries.
A film showing bright pink bottoms sitting on Victoria sponge cakes is projected onto a screen over the stage.
And you can find the best of them all in one place, twice a week.
Although we can see and hear these animals, they are literally living their lives at a different speed to us.
The podcast is called Seriously. Subscribe now on the BBC Sounds app.